Thank you for holding, and welcome to the Titan Pharmaceuticals third quarter 2017 financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a question and answer session following today's remarks. Please be advised that this call is being taped at the company's request and will be archived on the company's website starting later today. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Sunil Bhosle, President and CEO of Titan Pharmaceuticals. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Amy, and thank you all for joining us. Welcome to the Titan Pharmaceuticals call to review financial and operational results for the third quarter of 2017 and recent business updates. Before we begin, I wanted to inform you that this morning we filed our third quarter 2017 Form 10-Q with the SEC, and the press release issued this morning provides a summary of the results, and it can also be found on our website at titanpharm.com. Joining me on the call today from Titan are Dr. Mark Rubin, our Executive Chairman, Dr. Kate Beebe, Executive Vice President and Chief Development Officer, and Brian Crowley, our Vice President of Finance. But before we provide an update on the company and the summary financial results, Jennifer will review the required cautions regarding forward-looking statements. Jennifer, please.
Thank you, Sunil. I want to remind everyone that certain matters that will be discussed today, other than historical information, may contain forward-looking statements within the meaning of Section 27A of the Securities Act of 1933 and Section 21E of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. Such statements include, but are not limited to, any statements relating to our product development programs and any other statements that are not historical facts. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that could negatively affect our business, operating results, financial condition, and stock price. Factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from management's current expectations include those risks and uncertainties relating to the commercialization of Probufene, the regulatory approval process, the development, testing, production, and marketing of our drug candidates, patent and intellectual property matters, and strategic agreements and relationships. We expressly disclaim any obligation or undertaking to release publicly any updates or revisions to any forward-looking statements contained herein to reflect any change in our expectations or any changes in events, conditions, or circumstances on which any such statement is based, except as required by law. And now, back to you, Sunil.
Thank you, Jennifer. We will start the call with an overview from our Executive Chairman, Dr. Mark Rubin, followed by Dr. Kate Beebe, who will provide an update on our product pipeline, and then Brian Crowley will summarize the financial results. I will close with a brief recap before opening the call for your questions. So let's get started. Mark?
Thank you, Sunil, and thank you all for joining us today for a review of our business highlights for the quarter and an update on progress on our portfolio of products based on our ProNeura long-term continuous drug delivery technology. I want to begin by addressing the decline in Probufene revenue for the quarter. While we did certainly anticipate that the adoption of Probufene for the year or so post-launch would be a measured one, we were, however, very surprised and disappointed with the decline in its sales this quarter. Feedback from Braeburn, as well as feedback from key opinion leaders, indicates that patient access to Probufene has been negatively impacted by issues related to the timing and level of reimbursement by third-party payers, as well as requirements of the Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy, or REMS programs, as prescribed by the FDA. And as an example of the former issue, it can take weeks or even months for an insurance provider to approve coverage from the time a pre-authorization claim is submitted. This kind of delay in receiving a much-needed and a potentially life-changing treatment is frustrating to both the patient as well as his or her healthcare provider, and it is especially disappointing in light of the ongoing national opioid epidemic. I do want to take a moment to address the changing landscape of treatment options for opioid use disorder. In the next several months, two companies have PDUFA dates for depot formulations of buprenorphine. Indivior is a company with monthly depot formulations, and Braeburn with both weekly and monthly formulations. And both companies' products received positive advisory committee votes last week, as you probably know. If approved, these products should continue to shift the current treatment paradigm away from daily oral therapy and towards longer duration procedure-oriented treatments. We believe that this dynamic should have a positive effect on the acceptance and uptake of probuphine as patients enter the maintenance treatment stage. Opioid use disorder is a chronic neurobiological disease requiring ongoing treatment, often for years, and so we strongly believe that patients can benefit from transitioning to probuphine for maintenance treatment. And of course, we continue to believe in the long-term medical value of and the prospects for uptake of the product. In light of the current sales of probuphine to date, we do expect that we will need additional capital by the second half of 2018 in order to continue advancing our pro-neurodevelopment programs. We are evaluating alternatives and potential pathways available to us, including ex-US partnering opportunities for probuphine, possible collaborations for one or more of our pro-neuro programs, and financing strategies. Importantly, I want to assure you that in addition to these alternatives that I just mentioned, and in addition to our discussions with Braeburn and with treatment providers that are aimed at a fuller understanding of the impediments to the uptake of probuphine, the board is actively assessing all operative and strategic business options available that can increase shareholder value. We will keep you informed. I now want to turn the call over to Dr. Beebe to provide additional details on our development programs, including our efforts to secure approval and partnerships for probuphine in Europe, as well as our ropinirole implant for Parkinson's disease and our early stage programs for the prevention of opioid use relapse and overdose, chronic pain, type 2 diabetes, hypothyroidism, and the prevention of malaria, as well as other chronic disease settings. Kate.
Thank you, Mark, and hi, everyone. As you know, our portfolio is based on our proprietary pro-neuro technology, which is designed to provide long-term, continuous drug delivery for up to 12 months. We remain optimistic and committed to the prospects of pro-neuro across a diverse range of chronic diseases. First, let me start with an update on probuphine outside of the United States. While Braeburn holds commercialization rights to probuphine in the U.S. and Canada, many of you know that we retain rights to probuphine in Europe and other territories. Our initial focus for probuphine outside of the U.S. is in Europe, which is the second largest market for buprenorphine-based products, with sales representing about 10% of the $2-plus billion U.S. market. This week, on Monday, November 6th, we submitted a marketing authorization application, or MAA, with the European Medicines Agency. We've also continued our discussions with the Irish rapporteur and British co-rapporteur countries, who will be leading the review of our MAA. And we've received scientific advice and support from both agencies for our application. At the same time, we have continued to meaningfully advance discussions with potential commercial and development partners for probuphine in Europe and elsewhere. And lastly, in October 2017, Titan received a notice of allowance from the European Patent Office for a patent covering methods and use claims for treating opioid dependence with a subdermal implant containing buprenorphine. Upon issuance, this patent is expected to provide protection for probuphine in Europe into 2023. Now, in addition, if approved by the EMA, probuphine will receive 8 to 10 years of data exclusivity from the date of approval. This means that potential competitors would not be able to reference the probuphine data as part of a generic development program. Now turning to our Rapinrol implant program for Parkinson's disease. The Rapinrol implant is designed for the long-term continuous delivery of Rapinrol HCL for the treatment of signs and symptoms of Parkinson's disease, like stiffness, tremors, muscle spasms, and poor muscle control. Rapinrol is a dopamine agonist currently available in daily or more frequently dosed oral formulations for both the treatment of Parkinson's disease symptoms and restless leg syndrome. In October, we treated the first patient in our phase 1-2 trial of the Rapinrol implant, and this study is progressing. The primary objectives are to characterize the pharmacokinetic profile of the Rapinrol implants, to evaluate their safety and tolerability, and also to explore potential signals of efficacy using established disease-specific assessment scales. Patients on a stable dose of L-DOPA plus oral Rapinrol will have their oral Rapinrol switched to Rapinrol implants for 3 months of treatment in this study. Initial data from the first cohort of patients is expected in the first half of 2018, and the study completion is targeted for the end of next year. This quarter, we also announced that we are collaborating with Opiant Pharmaceuticals on a feasibility assessment of a proNeura-based subcutaneous implant to administer an opioid antagonist for the prevention of opioid relapse and overdose. Currently, the only FDA-approved opioid antagonist for relapse prevention is a monthly depot injection of naltrexone. Our goal would be to develop a product with at least a 6-month duration that would allow patients to be opioid-free for a longer period, providing a greater window for long-term recovery and, most critically, relapse and overdose prevention. Relapse and fatal overdose among those with opioid use disorder is significantly higher than any other type of drug addiction. For example, as many as 91% of those in recovery will experience a relapse. At least 59% of those who relapse do so within the first week of sobriety, while about 80% relapse within a month after discharging from a treatment or detox program. The risk of a fatal overdose is at its highest during a relapse. Now, we are also evaluating the feasibility of several other product candidates across a variety of different chronic disease indications for potential inclusion in our portfolio. Early non-clinical testing is being conducted for the development of a kappa opioid receptor implant for the treatment of chronic pain. If successfully developed and approved, this would offer a potential non-addictive opioid analgesic for the treatment of chronic pain. We are also actively working on formulation optimization and early in vitro testing for liraglutide, otherwise known as Victoza, for adults with type 2 diabetes. Titan also presented data from a non-clinical study on the use of its proNeura subdermal implant for the long-term sustained delivery of liothyronine, or LT3, during a poster session at the annual meeting of the American Thyroid Association. The proNeura implants continuously released LT3 dose-dependently for more than 6 months, providing important initial in vivo information for the potential development as a treatment of hypothyroidism. In addition, Titan, the Southwest Research Institute, and the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, or WRAIR, are collaborating to evaluate the proNeura platform for the long-term prevention of malaria. In November 2017, the WRAIR presented encouraging non-clinical data from this collaboration during a poster session at the annual meeting of the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene, demonstrating sustained release of the antimalarial drug etobicoke and protection from malaria for up to 12 weeks. This program is being fully funded and conducted by WRAIR. These early stage product candidates will be prioritized and pursued as resources allow. Our Proneura continuous long-term drug delivery platform holds great promise for the treatment of select chronic diseases, for which maintaining consistent levels of a medication in the blood over long periods of time may offer safety or other health benefits. We look forward to updating you on continued progress as we develop our portfolio of Proneura-based product candidates. Now I'll turn the call over to Brian. Brian?
Thank you, Kate. A summary of the financial results was provided in our press release this morning, and details are available in the Form 10-Q filed with the SEC. At this time, I'll just highlight a few items. In the third quarter of 2017, we reported approximately $40,000 in license revenue from royalties earned on net sales of Probufen by Braeburn, compared with approximately $26,000 in the third quarter of 2016. Research and development expenses for the third quarter of 2017 were approximately $2.7 million, compared with approximately $1.6 million for the third quarter of 2016, an increase of approximately $1.1 million. The increase in R&D expenses was primarily associated with increases in external expenses related to the support of our roupinirole implant program and expenses on other Proneura product development programs. General and administrative expenses for the third quarter of 2017 were approximately $1.4 million compared with approximately $1.1 million in the third quarter of 2016. The increase was primarily related to increases in non-cash stock compensation and employee-related expenses, fees and expenses related to the Horizon loan, and other expenses. Net loss applicable to common shareholders in the third quarter of 2017 was approximately $4.2 million, or approximately 20 cents per share, compared with a net loss of approximately $2.6 million, or approximately 12 cents per share, in the same quarter in 2016. At September 30th, 2017, we had cash and cash equivalents of approximately $11.7 million, which we believe is sufficient to fund our planned operations through August of 2018. We are evaluating funding options, including, but not limited to, partnering opportunities for Probufen outside of the U.S., collaborations for one or more of our Proneura programs, and various financing strategies. Now I will pass the call back to Sunil. Sunil?
Thank you, Brian. While we are disappointed at the low numbers for Probufen in the third quarter, we continue to believe that Probufen has an important role in the treatment of opioid use disorder. The clinicians we have spoken with continue to indicate a desire to treat patients with Probufen, and while the numbers are small, the patients appear to like the benefits this product can provide. However, the restrictive REMS program, together with inadequate reimbursement to patients and their doctors from insurance providers, has hampered adoption of Probufen. We are in dialogue with Braeburn to fully understand and address the issues limiting Probufen sales, and as needed, establish new strategies to help advance adoption of the product. We will also be closely monitoring the treatment landscape as new extended release and depot injections become available in order to identify the best position for Probufen in the marketplace. We're also pleased to announce that we filed the MAA for Probufen with the EMA on November 6th, and we also received a notice of allowance on a patent that will offer protection for Probufen in Europe through 2023. Now, simultaneously, we continue to advance our other Proneura-based products with the belief that this long-term continuous drug delivery platform can have significant advantages over current daily dosed chronic disease treatments. During the third quarter, we treated the first patient in our phase 1-2 trial of Ropinirole for the treatment of the signs and symptoms of Parkinson's disease. And we began a collaboration with Opiant Pharmaceuticals on a feasibility assessment of a subcutaneous implant using our ProNeura technology to administer an opioid antagonist for the prevention of opioid relapse and overdose. Additionally, we are continuing feasibility evaluation and non-clinical studies in the areas of chronic pain with a kappa opioid receptor agonist and type 2 diabetes with the currently marketed product. Lastly, we reported encouraging non-clinical data from our programs in hypothyroidism and in the long-term prevention of malaria. So while we work rapidly to get Probufene back on track, we intend to pursue these additional programs based on priorities and, of course, resources. Although we can't go into all the details right now, I want to assure you that the board and management are looking at all options for maximizing the value of Titan, both from the product portfolio and other strategic considerations. We look forward to reporting continued progress as we move forward. This brings us to the end of our formal remarks. And now, Amy, if you are ready, we are ready to take questions from the call participants.
Thank you. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. The first question is from John Vandermosten at Zacks.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, John.
Hi,
good
John.
Afternoon.
Just first wanted to get a sense of Braeburn's ability to get done what needs to get done. I'm thinking, you know, maybe a larger partner might have had, you know, relationships or some other skills or experience that might have helped them do a little bit better. And I'm wondering if you can perhaps point to a few things that, you know, maybe are missing that could be there for, you know, for getting Probufene, you know, deeper penetration of the product.
Thanks, Sean. You know, certainly our focus right now is to understand the nitty-gritty details of why Probufene lost momentum. Clearly, there was momentum building in the second quarter, and when we saw the results for the third quarter, it was very disappointing to see that that momentum was not carried forward. Now, it's been only a few days since we have learned of this progress. And so we've started digging. We've started talking with clinicians out in the field to understand what are the issues. We have, of course, spoken with Braeburn to understand how they see it. And this is going to continue for a few days. So I cannot, you know, give you specific answers now, except assuring you that we really are getting involved in the details to understand this and come up with strategies that will provide the correct, getting Probufene on the correct track. That is really our commitment and goal, and that's what we are attempting to do. I'm sure that benefits everyone, including Braeburn, but we will look forward to seeing how best to progress this from here on.
Okay. And Mike took over as CEO back in June, and I was wondering if maybe he changed the strategy up, and, you know, every time there's a change in strategy, maybe there's a little slowdown or something until the new approach takes over. And I was wondering if that might be part of it.
John, I mean, it's certainly, you know, Mike and our conversations with Mike when he came in clearly had intended to support Probufene just as it had been previously, and their commitment to that product he felt was strong. Of course, it's the only product they are currently marketing. Our dialogue with Braeburn you know, which is periodic, they always indicated that they continue to support Probuphine. So in that sense, you know, that's all I can point out, that that's what they have indicated. Now, clearly, at the same time, the momentum was lost. So how and why, yep, that's the key parts we want to find out, and we will.
Okay. And then the licensing agreement with Braeburn, are there certain minimums that have to be met to maintain the license? Or once they have it, and they have it, and they can do whatever they want with it?
The licensing agreement does not have minimums in it. It does require them to actively market and support the product, similar to other products that they would. So it has some things, but not specific to minimums. So, you know, these are typical of the licensing agreements for new products, and that's how it's set.
Okay. And then Canada, I know that they sublicensed that to Knight, I believe.
Yes.
Have there been any sales in Canada yet?
It has not been approved in Canada yet. I believe it's sometime next year, in mid next year or so, is what the date seemed to that I recall for approval in Canada.
Okay. And then just the last question is on R&D expense, and you know, as we've continued with the development programs, it's come up a little bit, and I guess we should expect, you know, a similar level to continue through the fourth quarter and on into next year.
You know, to some extent, the third quarter included the startup of, parts of the ropinirole study, but also some of the expenses associated with filing the MAA that we just did in the beginning of November. So preparation of these things took some extra expenses. We, of course, are very conscious of now the cash position we are in as well and what potentially we may see as revenues from Probuphine. So we will look to contain our expenses within manageable levels. Key part, of course, is the ongoing clinical study for ropinirole, which we intend to pursue. And we will keep things in mind with other programs to make sure we stay within our budget. So I would expect the fourth quarter research and development expense to be probably a little less than the third quarter, but not by a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Sunil.
Sure, John. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Scott Henry at Roth Capital.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Just a couple
questions. Hey, Scott.
Questions.
Glad you could join in.
Certainly. As you kind of survey the landscape to try to get a sense of what's happening with Probuphine, what kind of feedback have you received from physicians? Is demand not the issue, and it's more of the execution of getting reimbursement, or just any feedback that you're getting that you find interesting?
Well, certainly we have spoken with a handful of clinicians out in the field. We haven't, so it's not a large group yet. We are doing this and continuing to do this. What we do see is, that patients who are treated like this product, that's what they have indicated. They have indicated that patients that they believe would benefit, and when they talk to them about it, they get a favorable response. So it's good from that standpoint, at least in the small numbers, a positive feedback about the patients is very good. What frustrates the physicians is the length of time it takes to get pre-approvals. They give us examples where it goes from few weeks to few months. And they're maintaining patients' enthusiasm to switch to this treatment is not so simple when it takes that long. And so these are the frustrations that the physicians talk about, the how best to address that clearly has to also do with the insurance systems. And this should be addressed and will be addressed.
Okay, great. Thank you for that color. If I could just ask another question.
Sure.
With regards to monetization of some of the pipeline products or the ex-US rights, what sort of timetable would you expect? I mean, obviously, you don't know for certain, but do you think you could monetize something in the next 6 months or just any color you could provide?
Sure. You know, I mean, obviously the farthest along we have been pursuing Probufene in Europe and the potential for establishing a partnership for that. And we certainly hope that over in the next, you know, 6 month period that is in place. Clearly, submitting the MAA is a major milestone. It starts a clock ticking in terms of, you know, acceptance, approval, and all these things that come down the road. So that is certainly something we are very eager and keen and interested in pursuing as rapidly as we can. Outside of that, you know, we are collaborating in the early assessment with Opiant Pharmaceuticals with a, you know, antagonist implant for treating opioid disorder. And that, the early assessment results from both the technical side, which we are pursuing, and the commercial evaluation that Opiant is doing, will be available in the first half of next year. And I certainly hope that will be a successful result that can lead into a potential program as well that has value and shows substantial value added to Titan. So those certainly are the early ones we have, and obviously the WRAIR, the Walter Reed program going on, and we look for funding for that from the government, and if that's available, that would be very meaningful. And we will look at other avenues, including what NIH can provide for, say, the collaboration with Opiant and others. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you for taking the questions.
Thank you very much. Take care.
The next question is from John Vandermosten at Zacks.
I just had a follow-up. Hello again. Is there any way that the Opiant collaboration might get ahead of the Rafinerol or T3 programs at all, just because it maybe has, you know, a lot more focus, or a partner is eager to push it along?
You know, I mean, that's certainly a very timely program. It has, there's a lot of attention to the epidemic opioid crisis right now. And, you know, funding for something like that, if it is made available by the NIH, it can certainly speed up that program tremendously. So it's our hope that that will be the case, that it's a meaningful program and is looked at that way by the medical community as well as NIH.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
This concludes our question and answer session, and I would like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Bosley for closing remarks.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, everyone, for participating in this call today. I know it's not an easy one at times, but trust us, we are trying to accomplish a lot during this coming quarter, and we will attempt to get Probufene back on track. As always, we appreciate your ongoing support, and we will provide periodic updates as we move forward. So thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.